It is an old joke, but it has an element of truth to it. The joke goes like this. One day, NASA scientists probing space discover that there is a giant asteroid that is about to smash into the Earth and destroy all life as we know it. And there's nothing they can do, and it's all over, so they release the information to the world, and everywhere in the world, the headline in the newspaper is, asteroid coming, world about to be destroyed. But in Israel, the paper reads, world about to be destroyed, Jews hit hardest. Because we do have a certain inward looking, Hebraocentric world that makes it difficult sometimes for us to look at any event in the world without thinking, what is its impact on Jews and the Jewish people? As many of you know, I recently went on a historical tour in Rome for a week. And I was subject to exactly this malady. I couldn't just go to Rome. It wasn't a Jewish tour, but everywhere I went and everything I looked at, I kept thinking, what was the impact on the Jewish people? What was it like for Jews when they built that building or painted that painting? And I couldn't shake it. And of course, the two periods of Rome that are most significant both in history and also for our purposes this morning are ancient Rome, the Rome of the Caesars, which was also, of course, the Rome of the rabbis, and the Second Temple, which was destroyed by Titus and the Romans. And then medieval Rome, the Rome of medieval times and the Renaissance, which was also the time of the greatest struggle between the small Jewish population by that time and the church, the establishment in the 16th century of the Roman ghetto. And so I thought I would divide my report, as it were, this week about ancient Rome and next week about Renaissance Rome, asking in both cases, how did the Jews survive? And I think that the answer is actually somewhat different, that they made it through the ancient world in a different way and for a different reason than they made it through the humiliations and persecution of medieval Rome and Renaissance Rome. First of all, the question that always arises when you visit any great civilization, whether it be England or what once was the Ottoman Empire, and certainly more discussed than any other empire in history, ancient Rome, is why did they rise and why did they fall? And this is something that I actually spoke about several weeks ago, but I want to offer a slightly different perspective this morning that helps us understand something about Jewish history. There was no reason intrinsically for Rome to rule the world. It wasn't as though it had a favored location over other empires. But the Romans managed to combine several things. First of all, they had a certain military discipline that they took over from the Greek model of Sparta that served them very well. Second, Romans were tolerant. That may strike us as strange. We don't think of great military empires as being tolerant, but basically the Romans were. There is something, after all, tolerant about paganism. I worship my God, you worship your God, he worships his God. We're all gods together. And it's okay. And nobody would dare say your God isn't really a god. It's impolite. Everybody's God is a god. And that allows you to be inclusive in a certain way, because your God gets to be a God as long as you pay your taxes. That's the criteria. If the taxes come in on time, you have a God. If they don't, you have the Roman army at your doorstep. And the other thing that Rome did, which was very smart and was in fact critical to, for example, Caesar's conquering Gaul, one of the great episodes in Roman history, was they offered people incentives. Becoming a Roman citizen gave you advantages. It gave you legal advantages. You had legal protections. You couldn't just be assaulted by anyone. Even, by the way, it went so far as if you were going to be executed, if you were a Roman citizen, it would be done painlessly, which is a big legal benefit, after all. And that idea that you would come and you would see Rome in its vast, its baths, its public works, because the Romans, you know, the Romans invented very little. In fact, one of the great Roman writers and thinkers, Quintilian, once said, "We made nothing new." But they took the best, especially of the Greeks and of the Etruscans, of all the civilizations they inherited, and they learned from. But one thing they were masterful at is they were great engineers. And that's why all over the world you see Roman walls, Roman aqueducts. Now, there is, in fact, I don't have the exact quotation here, unfortunately. I should have looked it up beforehand. There's a beautiful passage in James Joyce's Ulysses where he talks about the fact that where the Jews set foot, they said, "We will build a shrine to God," and where the Romans set foot, they said, "We will build a toilet." Because that's what the aqueducts basically are, right? They're sewage and fresh water. But the truth is, in the ancient world, that was a tremendous benefit. And aqueducts, which the Romans built all over, were a powerful motivation for being part of this efficient empire. And the way in which the empire sustained itself, and this has, I think, powerful lessons for modern America, is it took tribes that were not Roman and Romanized them. It gave them the identity of Romans. It made sure that wherever you lived, whatever your other identity, what you were most proud of was that you were a Roman citizen. And that enabled the Romans to knit together gradually in increasing circles this enormous empire and to keep it going. It was so tolerant, by the way, that although we don't talk much about this, some of the most important soldiers in the Roman army were Jews. And even though we don't normally think of Jews as soldiers in the ancient world, some of them were, and probably more than we know about, because after all, most soldiers don't leave behind them in the ancient world written documents. We don't have letters home. But then you ask yourself, so how did it dissolve? And there are, as you know, or you can certainly imagine, all sorts of social, economic, and other explanations for why Rome ceased to be Rome. But I really do believe that the most important single factor in history is the non-material factor, is the idea. If you ask yourself, what is it that raised the empire, it was in part the idea of Romanness, in the same way, by the way, that what preserved America was the idea of an American, was the notion of a unity among all the states. They all wanted ultimately one identity. And what happened was, in time, that the Romans discovered that what they believed in wasn't enough to sustain the world they wanted to create. Because after all, when the emperor keeps changing, when the gods keep shifting, when the demands get greater and greater, and all you believe in is Romanness, which at bottom is a belief in the power of Rome, you find that every time your power is chipped away at, you have a hard time believing in yourself. If you don't believe in something greater, that the power serves some ideal that is greater than yourself, then when your power starts to diminish, so does your self-confidence. And as at the edges of the empire, people started to chip away, Romanness began to collapse. And very soon, it was corroded from within and from without. In fact, in this morning's Haftarah, we see the same thing happen. Why did Samson fail? He was, after all, the strongest guy around. And the answer is because he didn't believe in anything. Because ultimately, he could be fooled, he could be manipulated, he could be diminished, because all he believed in was the strength of Samson. And power in service of oneself will ultimately fail. Now the Jews, on the other hand, had no power. They were, at one point, a fairly large number in ancient Rome. Some estimates go as high as 10%, although that's probably too high. But they had no power, and yet somehow they survived. If you want the image of the difference between the Jews and the Romans, it was very vividly brought home to me as we stood outside the Colosseum. The Colosseum, as you may know, was one of the great structures of the ancient world. It housed 50,000 people. 50,000 people in one stadium. And there, of course, they would watch the most horrific spectacles that you can imagine. But that's a lot of people, and at least according to ancient historians, they could clear that place in 5 minutes. So the engineering was brilliant. And we stood outside the Colosseum, which is still formidable, even though obviously it's diminished by time and it doesn't, you know, and everything that ever glittered has long since been stripped away. And the historian who was leading the trip, Victor Davis Hanson, told me, you know, an article appeared just a few years ago that demonstrated on the basis of ancient documents, new information that I had never heard, that the Colosseum was built and financed with the spoils of the temple in Jerusalem. I felt a chill go through me. Because there was that structure that everybody in the world knows or has heard of. And I thought of all the implements that the Kohanim used when they recited the blessing that we talked about this morning. I thought about the menorah that you can see on the Arch of Titus. You can see the soldiers carry it away on this frieze, on a carved panel in the arch. And I thought it was probably melted down to pay for the Colosseum. And nobody, but nobody, who watched that building be built would ever have imagined that almost 2,000 years later, the Romans would be gone and the Jews would be here. So why? I think it has to do with the fact that the way Jews opposed ancient Rome was by believing in something greater than themselves. Because the opposition, you know, the reason the Romans were tolerant is not because they believed something deeply, but were willing to have other people have their beliefs. It was because their beliefs didn't go that deep. Because religions and cults shifted in Rome all the time. And when they came up against the Jewish people, who really believed something, and didn't think that it would change tomorrow, or the day after, or the day after, the average Roman was puzzled and angry, and thought, why can't the Jews be like everybody else? What do they care if the emperor is a god? And the answer was, of course, that the Jews really did believe that there was a god. And therefore, the emperor was an imposter. And worship of the emperor was idolatry. And it didn't matter that Jews didn't have earthly power. because they clung to what they believed in, even in the face of an overwhelming power. And they thought that God, first of all, and Torah, that not all learning and not all teaching was equal, but that they had a book that was, they had the temerity to say, better than your book. They had scripture that was sacred, and Homer wasn't. They had rabbis who taught holy things, and Cicero was only eloquent. And then, in addition to God and Torah, they believed in the promise of Israel. That it wasn't only a function of what kingdom is powerful. It was also a function of what land is promised. And so, the Romans, who thought that it made sense that they should administer that province just like they administer every conquered province, ran up against this idea that the Jews had that actually, it's not humanly created, these values. That it's something greater, and that it transcends not only our wishes, but our age. And from age to age and time to time will continue. It's why you have that beautiful story that we read on Yom Kippur about Hananiah ben Tarajon, that remember the Romans wrapped him up in a Torah scroll and set him on fire. And his student said to him, "What do you see?" And he said, "The parchment is burning, but the letters are ascending to heaven." In other words, physical things, they'll disappear. But things that come from heaven, sacred words, promises from God, they'll endure. Ancient Rome was a magnificent civilization, but the core of it was a virtue that was possessed by human beings, not something greater that possessed human beings. It was something that people could reach for, not something that reached for them. Jews didn't believe that. Judaism wasn't important because of what we did, it was important because of what was done for us. It didn't have its origin with us, and therefore didn't have its ending with us. It was something greater. Ancient Israel believed that we are ancient agents of this world, but also that we are emissaries of another world. And it didn't matter how impressive or beautiful your buildings, they were just sword and stone and steel, and sooner or later, they would crumble to the earth. And as you walk around Hadrian's villa, you see this most powerfully. Hadrian was, according to many, the greatest emperor that Rome had. In some ways, greater than Augustus, in some ways, greater than Julius Caesar. But not for the Jews. For the Jews, Hadrian was the man who put to death Rabbi Hananiah ben Tarajon and Rabbi Akiva and ended sovereignty in the Jewish world over Israel for 2,000 years. This man built a villa, if you can call it that. His villa is twice the size of the city of Pompeii. It's gigantic. It would take you more than a day to walk around the circumference of Hadrian's villa. And as we walked around it, I looked at its ruin, and I said a silent prayer. Because as much as this represents for some the apex of Roman civilization, it represents for me the triumph of Jewish civilization. Hadrian is gone, and people walk about his ruins and think about him as a historical character. But we still name schools after Akiba, still say prayers given to us by the rabbis that Hadrian killed, still recall their names every time someone studies Talmud or says prayers on Yom Kippur. That is why, in the end, I think, this fearful, powerful empire collapsed, and why, in the end, this tiny, beleaguered people survived. because in fact we really did believe that the world is not about what you build, but what you worship. Not about what is visible, but what is intangible. Not about human power, but about the power of human beings in concert with God. That's why, standing before the might of ancient Rome, we survived. That's why we still survive. And why we always will. Shabbat shalom.